It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. While the United States is not the manufacturing powerhouse it once was, the production of goods is still a vital part of our economy. Coming up, business contributor Rebecca Harris with part two of her look at the importance of manufacturing in the region. But first,
this is Speaking Volumes. I'm Josh Rollerson. The summer session is underway at Carnegie Mellon University, and this year, English professor Kathy Newman is teaching a course on six novels that changed America through cycles of adaptation and cultural reappropriation. She stopped by to offer a peek at the syllabus.
We're going to start with Uncle Tom's Cabin by Harriet Beecher Stowe. It's published in 1859. President Lincoln used to call her that little lady that started the Civil War. And it is the second best-selling book of all time after the Bible. We're then going to go on to Wizard of Oz, which has been, as you know, adapted dozens of times for film especially. We're going to read The Great Gatsby. I was inspired by the movie coming out. I've never taught it before. It's a nice short book. It's been adapted many times for stage and film. My fifth text is not a novel. It's actually the song Strange Fruit that was recorded by Billie Holiday in 1939. And some people call it one of the first civil rights protest songs because the strange fruit refers to the body of a lynched person twisting in a tree. It was written by a Jewish-American high school teacher. He taught in the Bronx, and he was a member of the Communist Party, a very radical guy named Robert Maripol. So the book we're going to be reading that book is called Strange Fruit, The Biography of a Song. Next, we'll do Peyton Place by Grace Metellius, a real potboiler bestseller in 1956. Scandalous storylines, incest, drunkenness, violence, set in what looks on the surface of it like a very sleepy small town. But it's one of those books that I think we sort of talk about or refer to, you know, sort of a symbol of degradation from the mid-century. And it's actually a really interesting, well-written book. So it's fun to return to the original text and kind of go beyond the stereotype of it. And we're going to end with Alex Haley's Roots. The book itself was a bestseller, but the television series was for many years the most watched television show sort of all time. It had the largest television audience to date.
So were all of these selections chosen with the idea of adaptation specifically in mind, or is that just a happy accident?
Yes, they were chosen with adaptation in mind because in some ways part of my argument is why these texts were so influential is that cultural producers would keep going back to these texts and reinterpreting them. And that they would get remade by playwrights, by screenwriters, by songwriters, and that we have so many different versions of them. I feel like we can make a case that these texts have almost become like fairy tales. They're stories we tell to ourselves over and over again in different forms.
The other major theme I hear in that list is race.
Definitely. I think race is sort of one of the big American questions, one of the big American problems. We have an economic gap today that is still quite racialized. We are back to having the biggest gap between rich and poor that we've had since The Wizard of Oz was published. So I think thinking about a text that was written as a children's story, but that also had kind of an economic subtext, people argue that the Yellow Brick Road was about the gold standard and that it was sort of an economic fable about there was incredible sort of waves of recession in the 1880s and the 1890s, and many have argued that The Wizard of Oz was responding to that.
I wonder if The Wizard of Oz in that context is supposed to come off as some kind of a utopia, or I mean, is this just a satirical treatment?
I think that's a good question. Part of the problem with The Wizard of Oz is that even though the first book itself was influential, the movie has probably shaped our imagination about it more than anything else.
And is arguably much more so a Depression text, a text about that period.
Absolutely. And so I do think there was a way in which Emerald City looks like a kind of utopian 30s. It's got a kind of modern Gothic mm-hmm. architecture. I saw it on the big screen for the first time last year, and it was transcendent. It was so colorful, and there were so many different kinds of costumes and so many different kinds of hats. I mean, it must have been a utopian effort even just to make that film.
Hmm. Well, Kathy, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Josh. I appreciate it.
Kathy Newman is Associate Professor of English at Carnegie Mellon University. Tell us what's on your summer reading list on Twitter at Booksburg or email speakingvolumes@wesa.fm. You can find the podcast on iTunes. Speaking Volumes on 90.5 WESA is supported by the Community College of Allegheny County. Thanks for listening.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Last week, our business contributor, Rebecca Harris, director of the Center for Women's Entrepreneurship at Chatham University, paraphrased Mark Twain when she said that reports of the death of manufacturing in the United States were greatly exaggerated. She joins us again here in Studio A with part two of her report on manufacturing in the United States and our region and how it's still a vital part of our economy. Rebecca Harris, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
It's great to see you again, Paul.
Now, where we left off last week was you were talking about trends in manufacturing. And where are we with those trends?
So last week we had really finished on talking about Made in America and how that trend has become more and more important. So I pulled out a few additional numbers for you because I know how much you love the numbers, and you know I love the numbers. But if Americans just purchased their holiday gifts exclusively from U.S. manufacturers, it would create an estimated 4.6 million jobs for our economy. And this is according to the National Retail Federation. So this winter coming up, buy Made in America. So that's one trend that's very strong. The other trend I really wanted to talk about is something called additive manufacturing. This year, a $30 million grant was established to create the National Additive Manufacturing Innovation Institute. I know it's a mouthful in Youngstown,
wow.
Ohio. I know. It's got a great acronym. But additive manufacturing is really 3D printing, and it's the process of making the three-dimensional solid objects from a digital model. And basically, this process helps America serve as a high-tech manufacturing hub for the world for years to come, and I think that that's going to be very, very important as a trend.
Tell me about the Explore the New Manufacturing program, which was recently launched by the Catalyst Connection.
Absolutely. If for those of you who don't know, Catalyst Connection is a local economic development manufacturing consulting organization which helps really advance manufacturing companies here in Southwest Pennsylvania. And this Explore the New Manufacturing program was created to increase awareness of careers in manufacturing that are available in Southwestern PA and what are available to the emerging workforce. So what's really cool about this is that manufacturing leaders speak directly with students and provide exploration resources about career opportunities. And I think that that is going to be very, very important because we're not creating steel mills anymore. We're not making steel. Manufacturing has become very high tech. It has advanced skills. It is a very exciting industry to be in.
And what is the Pennsylvania STEM Initiative?
So for those of you who have not heard precisely what STEM means, the S in STEM is science, which includes biology, chemistry, marine biology, physics, science. Technology is the T in STEM, which is computer information systems, game design, developer, webware, web software. E is engineering, so that's everything from chemical to civil to computer to electrical to electronics. And to mechanical engineering, and then math is math and statistics. So this initiative here in Pennsylvania really seeks to increase the number of students, and especially women, minorities, and the underrepresented, to enter STEM careers. And also it helps to really retrain and recruit and get more people into these critical fields. Because if you don't really start at a younger level with STEM training, it's very difficult to create that later. So many, many grade schools, high schools, colleges, and graduate programs are really focusing on STEM. And part of this initiative is to make sure that students graduate from high school and they're proficient in STEM areas, and to increase the number and diversity of teachers who are well-prepared and create and support the public initiatives for STEM education.
And as people have looked at the decline of the steel industry, it's been largely technology-based jobs or technology-based businesses that are stepping up and replacing what the steel industry provided in terms of employment
right.
in particular.
That's what we initially saw, but now we're seeing more manufacturing actually coming back. But that manufacturing requires more technology skills. So you need engineering in this manufacturing. You need 3D design in this manufacturing. You need a lot more advanced operational know-how in this manufacturing. But we're seeing a lot of manufacturing come back.
And the trend behind that has been that businesses, companies are deciding we're not going to make things offshore anymore.
Right. And last week we talked about a whole concept of everybody bringing things, not everybody, but a lot of companies bringing things back to the United States and the essence of why that's important and that things are getting made here that previously hadn't. Large companies really bringing some manufacturing back that they previously had just sent abroad.
We're talking with Rebecca Harris. She's director of the Center for Women's Entrepreneurship at Chatham University, joining us here to talk about manufacturing in the United States. How do women do in manufacturing? Do they specialize?
So women in manufacturing, a 2013 article in the Thomasnet News Industry Market Reports indicates that the gender gap in manufacturing is actually wider, which does not make me happy, Paul. Although the number of jobs available in manufacturing has been increasing steadily since 2010, most of those jobs are being offered to male workers. So this trend does not bode well for workplace equality, as there are fewer women who are available to really be in the workforce in manufacturing and really continue to push the efforts of women in manufacturing. So what we found is there have been close to, 600,000 new jobs in the manufacturing industry over the last 3 years. Unfortunately, women have experienced a net loss of 28,000 jobs during that period. And as of May 2013, women account for only 32% of the manufacturing industry workforce. And in fact, women made up a larger percentage of manufacturing in 1990 than they do now. And I think part
why
of the,
is,
yeah,
is
why? I know.
Do we know?
I mean, I think part of the reason is really it's the training. It's getting back to what we talked to about STEM. Mm. Manufacturing used to be much simpler. Now you really need to have some of the engineering and the science, and women traditionally have not gone into those fields. And without the right skills, it's hard to get women into those areas. But, boy, manufacturing has such a current shortage of skilled workers. I think women really need to get into these skills. And these are great-paying jobs as well.
So do you see programs like STEM, for example, closing that gap?
That is really the purpose of these programs, to really get women in and get women more advanced in these areas. And I think that there's a possibility of doing that. And, of course, the first way to do that is to recognize there's a problem and then to deal with it. So I'm a total optimist, but I think educational institutions and manufacturers must really work together to attract women to the industry. And we're seeing some of that happen now with training programs. So I'm excited.
So to sum up part two of our discussion of manufacturing in the United States, there's a lot more of it happening than
Absolutely.
A lot of people may realize.
Absolutely. And there's more opportunity for training. There's an emphasis on math and science and engineering. And these areas will especially help women overcome the challenges that they really need in this new manufacturing era. But there's a lot more going on, so it's certainly a segment to watch.
Rebecca Harris is our business contributor and director of the Center for Women's Entrepreneurship at Chatham University. As always, Rebecca, a pleasure visiting with you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much. We got to figure out what we're going to make next, Paul.
That's right.
Yeah, we do.
Perhaps we can invent something.
Okay, let's do it.
We'll think about it. Thanks for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. You can catch the entire show online at WESA.FM or as a podcast in iTunes. And we welcome your comments and story ideas at ESSPGH@WESA.FM. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. This is 90.5 WESA, Pittsburgh's NPR news station.